Hey, welcome back to Crimes and Closets. This is Beth in my closet in North Carolina.
And this is Christy in my closet in St. Louis.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. How's it going?
Yeah, good. It's going great. Just trucking along. I'm so excited for a Crime Con.
Oh, yeah.
It's in a couple of months.
Yeah, it's going to come fast, I feel like. Because I feel like already the month of March is like flying by. I mean, mm-hmm. because of spring break and so much stuff happening, like, it's like, oh my gosh, what the heck?
Yeah.
Where'd the month go?
So I know. I messaged you the other day. I found this jacket that I've had forever, years actually. And I don't even remember why I bought it, but it's like a denim jacket with fringe mm-hmm. on it.
Oh.
Move over, guys. It just screams Nashville. And I was going through our like coat closet the other day and mm-hmm. found it. I was like, oh my gosh. And I pulled it out and put it on. My daughter was like, Mom, you're like Beyonce and the Texas Hold'em song. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Can we call her country yet? I don't know. But anyway, I like that
song. I still haven't heard it.
It's country.
Yeah. You told me about it. And you were like, what do you think of the new Beyonce going country? And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, I think that they can't hate on Taylor Swift for going pop anymore.
Well, no.
Well, but you know, yeah, I'm just saying. Yeah. It was a whole like, oh, Taylor Swift shouldn't win these awards because Beyonce is better than Taylor Swift. But then there's like a big feud, I guess, between like you can't like Beyonce and Taylor. You got to pick one. Which Beyonce and Taylor do not feel, by the way. They support each other very much. It's just something that fans do. But everyone, you know, they want to rag on Taylor for coming pop.
Well,
it's like, well, now Queen B is going country. So can't we all just get along?
Maybe that's why she did it.
Yeah.
I just have to say, like, I don't know. There's a lot of people out there, me included, that is just likes music. And so there's people that I like that are country, not a lot. There's people that I like that are pop. There's people I like that are rap. You know, like, I just like it all. Like, I find
just
songs
like
that
what
I like.
You like.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so if I like Beyonce, I can like Taylor Swift if I want to.
Yes, you can. I like it. You can. You don't. You can. But you can. You don't
not
dislike
like
her.
Yeah, right. No, I don't not like her, but I'm not a Swiftie. Like, I don't turn her songs off when I, they don't get turned off. So, but I will dress up as Beyonce.
Yeah. Oh man, you were
and I have
smoking hot. Listen, now should you're gonna I have to post it. Yep. Yes,
I might have to because I'm like, I can never, I can't pull that off again right now, currently. But I could then.
Smoking hot, guys. Let me tell you.
So, anyway. Ooh. Moving on. Is that okay?
Okay. Yeah. Let's move on.
I have kind of a funny story for you. So you guys know, well, I'm assuming you know, because it's like in the news a lot lately. Well, ish.
Oh, no.
Anyway, the Corey Richens case, the lady who killed her husband, or supposedly, allegedly killed her husband and then wrote a children's book about it. Well, not about the murder, but like helping her kids to get over the death.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
that's literally all I know. That's
oh, it. Okay. So okay. I've looked into it. I'm not like deep. Well, I kind of have deep dived. I won't do it just because it's like so sensational. But anyway, I've watched two Datelines because I think there was one and then they didn't update the other day. But anyway,
okay,
whatever, doesn't matter. Anyway, basically, her husband died unexpectedly. They were a young couple. Had it all. You should have seen the house that they had. Super nice. He had his own company. She was a like real estate person, like bought houses, fixed them up, flipped them. Like they were doing really well.
Okay.
And all of a sudden he dies. And I think it was like, I don't know, he had heart failure. Anyway, they ended up figuring out that he had fentanyl in his system. And
ooh,
so
yikes.
Initially it was just like, well, accidental, because you know how much stuff fentanyl is in these days, like it's laced mm-hmm. into other stuff and people don't know they're taking it and it's accidental overdose of this fentanyl. So that's what they just assumed because she was like, yeah, he takes gummies. Everyone knows he takes gummies every now and then and whatever, or at night to relax himself, whatever, just totally fine. But anyway, it comes out that now they think that she killed him And she gave him the fentanyl, a lethal dose of fentanyl, because he had said he had started putting things in trusts.
Oh, like, yeah.
Outside of her, so that they would, it, things would go to her, like her, the kids, but his sister okay. would be in charge of it. And like had said to somebody, like, if anything happens to me, look into Corey yeah. and blah, blah, blah.
Almost like biblical.
Yeah. So she clearly, obviously, she insists that she had nothing to do with it, but I believe she's been arrested for it. Anyway, okay. So we're watching this updated Dateline the other day of it, and Emery was like, where do you even get fentanyl from?
Yeah.
Like
on purpose.
Yeah. Like, clearly people are lacing it, but those are like drug dealer people who, like, I don't know where, I don't even know where they get it from.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, where do you get fentanyl? You know, he's like, sometimes you can buy, like, what is it, to make meth that was like over-the-counter Sudafed. Like, and right. so that's when they started like protecting Sudafed. Where he's like, what, where you get it? And I'm like, I have no idea. So I Google, where okay. can I get fentanyl?
Okay. Is it like a pain med?
I don't know because when you Google that, immediately on your screen, it pops up, help is available. Yeah. With an 800 number.
Yes. On it. Yeah. Okay.
And good. Like, does not answer the question. Like, no matter what, you don't see an answer to this question, which is, I mean, great.
Well, yeah, because it's deadly. So Google's like, I don't want to be responsible for this.
Right. However, yeah. I have definitely been put on a freaking list now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that question alone. Where mm-hmm. can I get fentanyl? And that pops up and whatever. Like, I
listen, we say we've been needs to this. Stay alive, girl.
Yeah.
Your husband yeah. cannot go missing now.
No.
Not with that Google search.
With everything we've been put on a list, but I'm 100% convinced now, I for sure. Like, I joke about that because clearly, like, people are true crime people and whatever it happens. You Google stuff. But mm-hmm. I really, truly think that I have now officially been put on a list.
Yeah,
I'm looking for fentanyl. Where to get it? Because I'm like, where can I get fentanyl?
You probably should have worded it differently. Where could a drug dealer get fentanyl?
Where does one get fentanyl?
Asking for a friend.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not getting away with anything.
No. Mm-mm. No.
Okay.
No. So if I get arrested, you know why.
Well, yes. Mm-hmm. I will vouch for you. We can play this. Listen.
Yeah,
it's your alibi.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yes.
Partially. If you need another one, let me know. Okay. So speaking of not getting away with anything, I have a crime that may just play right into that.
Oh, goody.
Yeah, let's get to it. Okay, my friends, this is a listener suggestion from our friend Karen.
Oh, hey, Karen.
Hey, Karen. She spells her name really neat, by the way. It's K-E-R-Y-N.
Oh, wow. That's not actually Karen.
Well, maybe you don't say it Karen. Maybe it's Corinne or something like that.
Yeah.
I didn't even ask.
I could see it being pronounced Karen, but it's just okay. Like, I've never seen that. Anyway, very yes, pretty.
It's very neat. I agree. If I said it wrong, I'm so sorry. Like a million times.
Okay.
So sorry. Okay. So this case is going to start out a little bit different than our ordinary case, but it was just necessary for me to organize it like this so it would make more sense. So we're going to be in a whole different bunch of places today. We're going to start out in Salt Lake City, Utah. We'll be in Sandusky, Ohio. We're going to Sacramento.
Sandusky, the roller coaster capital of the world.
Really? And we know this because...
I don't know.
I don't either.
Total random fact.
When I think of Sandusky, I always think of that movie Tommy Boy. Because that's where really? They lived with Sandusky, Ohio. Yes.
Okay.
We are two different people.
Yeah, we are.
All right. So this is the case of Karen Winslet and Annette Huddle.
Okay. Winslet.
And this really is Karen. K-A-R-E-N.
Got it.
Okay.
Got it.
In the spring of 1987, a 37-year-old woman named Margie Danielson went out on the town with her girlfriends.
Okay.
Margie had just gotten out of a 20-year marriage, and she was a single mom of three. and was ready to get back in the game, back in the dating game, and her friends convinced her to go to a country western bar with them in Salt Lake City, Utah, where she lived.
Okay.
Pretty quickly, a very handsome gentleman caught her eye, and she must have caught his as well, and the two ended up talking and dancing all night long.
Oh.
This man introduced himself as Sean Paul Lanier. He was ruggedly handsome in like a very 80s way. So mustache, nice hair. He did have good eyebrows.
Was the mustache a curly one?
No, it wasn't. But it was like the 80s mustache. Okay. But it was nice though. Like no joke, he was a good looking guy. Like he had really nice teeth, good smile, good build. Like he was handsome.
Okay.
So Sean Paul, which is what he went by, told her that he was a chef from California. He had studied at Le Cordon Bleu in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked for a fancy local restaurant in town in Salt Lake. He was a widow of two children, and both were college aged. And he said that he lost his wife in childbirth.
Oh, okay.
Which is very sad. And Margie kind of connected with him on the fact that they were both single parents.
Mm-hmm.
Their relationship moved very quickly. Sean Paul was extremely affectionate and was very attentive to Margie and to her daughters, actually. He was really good to them and they loved him. He was always showering her with gifts, love bombs, flowers, calling her all the time. And he was a really successful head chef. He was even featured on a local cooking TV show for like his skills and expertise. Oh. And like he was handsome and he was charming. And so he kind of helped put this restaurant out there. Margie fell very hard and very fast for Chef Jean-Paul.
I think I would too.
Yeah. He sounds great.
Yes. And not so much, huh?
Until he wasn't.
Right.
A couple of months into dating, Margie started to get a little overwhelmed with the constant grand displays of affection. And they started to get a bit aggressive. So one day, Sean Paul came home with a membership to a very exclusive gym in the area for Margie and all three of her daughters. And he also told them he was going to buy them all new workout clothes.
Hmm.
Well, Margie told him that she appreciated this gesture, but that she wasn't going to accept it because it was just too much. Like, it was very over the top. It was very expensive.
Right.
And she was just like, you know what? Thanks, but no. Like, it's just too much, Sean Paul. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, he did not like that. So later that day, Margie and her kids came home and they found brand new workout like outfits and shoes hanging on each one of their doors. Okay. So the couple had only been dating for a couple months at this point. Sean Paul did not have a key to her home.
Oh.
So she had no idea how he had gotten in. And immediately she felt like kind of violated because she, for one, had declined this offer.
Mm-hmm.
And for two, he's come in her home with her children without her permission.
Yeah.
So when she asked him how he had gotten in, he said that he crawled through an open bathroom window.
What?
Who does I don't that?
That's what I was going to say. I don't understand. Like, if my friend or my boyfriend is not home, maybe I might, like, jiggle the front door handle to be like, well, maybe they left it open. I can just like pop this right inside the door or something. Maybe I might do that. But mm-hmm. I'm not going to go look for an open window to climb through.
No. And that's the point is like, yes, you want to do something nice for her and her girls. And that's great. Even though she said she didn't want it, you're still like, but they'll get use out of it. I want to do this nice thing. That's great. But this is a boundary.
Yeah.
Like, you don't come into somebody else's home without permission that you've only known for a couple months.
Right.
Okay, well, although the kids were thrilled, Margie was like, no. Mm. No, Sean Paul.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So she kind of broke it off with him. Like, she just kind of told him, this is aggressive. This is a lot. I need a break. Mm-hmm. Like, we need to step back for a little bit. And she started to, like, avoid his phone calls, like, kind of back away slowly.
Mm-hmm.
Not long after that, though, Sean Paul reached out to Margie with some very devastating news. So his daughter, who was in college in California, had been killed in a car accident.
Oh, no.
So Margie felt terrible for him, obviously. And she didn't want, like, he loved her. He had professed his love to her. She didn't want him to be alone, like, mm-hmm. in this grief and this awful thing. So she kind of started, like, seeing him again, hanging out with him, going to dinner, like, just trying to be there for him. At first as a friend, but eventually the charm turned back on and, you know, she did have feelings for him. And so the romantic relation started back up. Very quickly after that, in March of 1988, Margie agreed to marry Sean Paul, and he moved in with her and her three daughters.
Okay.
So this all happened in, like, less than 1 year after they had first met. So this is very, very quick.
Well, it is, and especially when there were some issues that she had with him, with this, you know, moving too fast, being too much, breaking into my house. All that.
Right. Yes. But, like, you know, they took a break. They came back together. Mm-hmm. Some would see that as fate. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But immediately after Sean Paul moved in, Margie realized that he seemed to be having some financial issues, which she hadn't been aware of before. And they concerned her.
Mm-hmm.
Then, a week or two after their wedding, Margie got a phone call from one of her girlfriends that came in like a bit of a bombshell. So her friend told her she needed to turn on the TV. She said that she was watching an episode of America's Most Wanted.
Oh,
and she
no.
said to Margie, quote, "There's a man on the TV who looks like your hubby, and he's wanted for murder."
Oh my gosh. Like, whoa. Uh-huh. I mean.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Margie turned on the TV immediately and watched the episode. She saw the man that her friend was talking about. She could see, like, a resemblance to this man, you know, like, mm-hmm. to her husband. But the man on the TV was much smaller than Sean Paul. So, like, Sean Paul was, like, a big, muscular guy. He was a bodybuilder, actually. Mm-hmm. He was mm-hmm. a big dude. And this man who was wanted by the FBI was, like, he was smaller, younger, you mm-hmm. know, like, yeah, maybe they could be brothers, but it didn't exactly look like him, kind of mm-hmm. thing. This man that was on the TV was wanted by the FBI for being accused of killing two women, one in Ohio and one in California, and had been on the run for almost 7 years. So, like, they had been looking for him for 7 years.
Oh my gosh.
His name was Paul Stephen Mack.
Okay.
Okay. So the young lady who was murdered in California had disappeared from a country club. And, or wait, no, I'm sorry. The one that was murdered in Ohio had disappeared from a country club. Margie remembered that Sean Paul had told her that he used to work at a country club.
Hmm.
So Margie kind of started freaking out because there had been some red flags with Sean Paul.
Mm-hmm.
The country club thing was, like, pretty coincidental as heck. But at the same time, she was like, well, they don't really look like the same person. And also, how could I be married to a murderer?
Right.
Like, right. that doesn't yeah, like, happen.
And not know that.
Yeah, that doesn't happen to people.
Right.
Even so, Margie did not ignore, like, her concerns, her gut feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't totally trust her husband.
Right.
Not that she knew exactly why. She couldn't, you know what I mean? It's like she couldn't pinpoint what it was, but there was just something about him that she was like, I'm nervous.
Mm-hmm.
So she started snooping. In Sean Paul's wallet, Margie found two different Social Security cards on them. So both of them had the name Sean Paul Lanier, but they had two different numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so okay, she asked him about this, and he told her that one of the cards belonged to his son, who had the same name as him.
Right, okay, well, that is a good explanation.
Plausible,
mm-hmm.
weird, a little bit, well, but, like, yeah. It's plausible, but she still was suspicious. So she had a private investigator run the two social security numbers, and they were both people that were deceased, that were not Sean Paul Lanier.
Mm-hmm.
So she kept searching. She then found death certificates in Sean Paul's paperwork for his wife and for his daughter. So remember, his wife, he said, died in childbirth. And then he had the daughter in California who had been killed in the car accident.
Right.
But the date of the daughter's death on the death certificate was wrong. There were words that were misspelled. And there was no, like, official state seal on either death certificate.
Oh.
So they were both fake. Like, Margie was like, these are fake. Sean Paul. These are fake.
Oh, my gosh.
So she asked him about this. And he then went on to tell her this very elaborate story about being from New Zealand and his parents being wrapped up in the New Zealand mafia. And he was in the witness protection program. And that's why he had all of those false documents.
Wow. He's really, really going deep on this.
Yeah. Like, he's leaning in.
Wow. Okay.
Margie did not buy a sliver of what this man was telling her. She knew he was hiding something. And she thought that maybe he might be dangerous at this point.
Yeah.
So she's afraid. She decided to find out who this Sean Paul Lanier person really was. Okay, Margie.
Mm-hmm.
She took a glass that Sean Paul had used for breakfast, and with rubber gloves, she put it in a plastic bag and took it to the Salt Lake City Police Department for fingerprint testing.
Go, Margie!
Margie. Detective Margie.
Can you just do that? Can you just walk in and be like, I think my husband's a murderer. Can you please run these prints?
Okay, so I think typically no. However, when she got to the Salt Lake City Police Department, they were actually on alert that one of the wanted people was in Salt Lake City. Because when the America's Most Wanted aired, they started getting tips in about where this Paul Stephen Mack might be. And they got a tip from a woman in California that was friends with this Paul Mack person and, like, kept in contact with him. And the last time she had spoken to him, he told her he was living in Salt Lake City and was remarried. So when she saw him on America's Most – she didn't know he was a wanted murderer. But when she saw this woman in California, when she saw him on America's Most Wanted, she was like, I know that guy and I know where he is.
Ah,
so. Right. So the FBI had called Salt Lake City and were like, hey, we think this man is in your city.
Mm-hmm.
So then when Margie came to them to run this fingerprints and told them, I don't think my husband is who he says he is. They were like, well, it's worth a try. Like, let's do it.
Right.
So they ran the fingerprints in their database, like in the national database, and they did match the wanted murderer, Paul Mack. Margie found him. Margie's husband.
Oh my gosh.
Who she knew as Sean Paul Lanier was wanted in two different states for two different murders of young women. And he's living in her home with her three daughters.
And they don't have kids together.
No. They've only been married for like 6 weeks at this point.
And, I had another question. I can't remember what it was. Okay, go on.
Okay. So he had manipulated her. He had lied to her. He was like a master manipulator. Dude even went on a daggone cooking TV show.
Right.
Knowing he was a wanted man on the run.
I know.
Like the balls on you, Paul.
Right. Right. I remembered my question. Can I ask it?
Yes.
When was his last murder?
Okay. So I'm going to get into it. 1987, the year before.
Oh. Okay. Jeez.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so SWAT was called in to, like, stake out Margie's home and keep an eye on Paul Mack. He saw them, tried to escape out a window and drive away to avoid police, but they caught him anyway, and he was taken into custody without incident. Okay, so Paul Mack had been charged with the 1987 first-degree murder and rape of 21-year-old Karen Winslet from Sacramento, California. So he was charged with that.
Okay.
He was also the prime suspect in a 1981 murder of 19-year-old Annette Huddle in Sandusky, Ohio.
Mm.
So Paul had been on the run since becoming a suspect in that 1981 murder. So he had been, it had been 7 years
that
they were looking for him for her murder. And then now he was charged with another murder in 1987. They found that he had used multiple aliases throughout that time, like they think six or so, and he had gotten married 7 times. So Margie turned out to be his 8th wife.
Oh my gosh.
And he had no children, by the way. Like the daughter and son that he said were in college that died in the car accident. Mm-mm. Lies. Okay. So let's talk about these murdered women really quick. We're going to move past.
Okay. Okay.
Paul Mack. So Annette Rimmel Huddle was born on March 28th, 1962. She grew up in Milton, Ohio with parents Robert and Janet Huddle, and she had a sister named Anita. Annette is described as being headstrong, free-spirited, and independent. She graduated from Upper Sandusky High School and was looking for a job so that she could make her own money, move out, figure out what she wanted to do. She is absolutely beautiful, like strikingly lovely in a very effortless way from the pictures that I have seen. Annette got a job at the Marion Country Club in Marion, Ohio, and had been working there as a secretary for 3 months for a man named Paul Mack. Annette had been complaining to her sister that she had a really creepy boss.
Yeah,
he was always hitting on her and flirting with her, and it was like kind of harassing. So she was like, I do not like this man. He skeeves me out. So Annette went to work on Wednesday, July 8th of 1981, and normally she had her parents pick her up from work, or like she would get a ride with a friend or somebody. But on this day, she had called and told whoever was supposed to give her a ride that she was actually going to get a ride with her boss, Paul Mack.
Right.
She was never seen alive again.
Oh, Lord.
She was reported missing immediately, but the following day, her body was found on the bank of a river in a nearby town by some people in a canoe. And I gotta tell you, people that are like ride canoes, what are they called? Are they like canoers? Canoeists? I got so hung up on this. Like, I don't know what to call them. Canoeers? By some canoeers?
Rowers?
Rowers? That's a different thing. That's a different thing. Anyway.
I don't know.
Okay, so they found her, unfortunately, and it was determined that she had been in the water for approximately 24 hours, and she was very, very decomposed, so dental records had to be used to identify her. 19-year-old Annette had been raped, and her cause of death was strangulation. Co-workers told police that Annette had left work with Paul Mack, so he was presumably the last person that she was seen alive with. And they also learned that this said Paul Mack had been making inappropriate advances towards her. So he immediately became police's prime suspect in Annette's rape and murder. They went to question him and bring him in, but he was gone.
Oh.
He had packed up and left and was on the run. A be on the lookout was issued for him, but police were never able, and they like searched his home, anything that he had left behind, but they were never able to find any evidence that actually connected Paul with Annette's rape and murder, except for the fact that he had been harassing her and was the last person to be seen with her when she was alive. So he was never actually charged with her murder, but he was listed as the prime suspect. And remained as the prime suspect, and they were looking for him in connection with this. Okay, so it's not totally known where Paul went after Annette's murder. This is amazing to me. He did a stint in prison in like the mid-1980s for like nonviolent offenses. I think it was like marijuana related. So I guess the police did find him at that point. Maybe they just didn't communicate back to Ohio.
Okay, I was going to say, how did he not get identified?
I'm not sure what the system looked like in 1980 because I mean, he was going by the name Paul Mack when he was in prison. So, like, he wasn't hiding at that point or using an alias. But, like, I mean, they couldn't arrest him because he wasn't officially charged. He was just a suspect. So maybe, like, that goes in the system in a way that it wouldn't pop up if you were arrested again. Yeah, I'm not really sure. I think now we communicate better, like, when it comes to stuff. But I don't know back in the day. I don't know how he got. I don't know why they're saying he was on the run for 7 years when he was, like, in prison for part of that.
Right.
For other offenses. But
there was a bolo out, so you imagine that.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I don't really know. Either way, he never got brought back to Ohio. They never questioned him in relation to Annette Huddle's murder.
Okay.
While he was in prison, though, in, like, the mid-1980s, he was corresponding with a woman named Sharon. They ended up getting married while he was incarcerated. After his release, Sharon claims that Paul became very violent and abusive and controlling, and that one night he had strangled her to the point where she passed out, so she left.
Yeah.
She left. But, like, once they found him and, like, all this other stuff came out about him being a wanted murderer, she came forward and said, yeah, he's an abusive guy. He's violent.
Now, I have a question. So she left. Did they get a – like, I want to know, like, he was married 8 times. She was the 8th one, Margie. Was he divorced all those times, or did he just, like, disappear and leave?
Because they were under aliases.
Right.
And so – well, no, this Sharon person was not under an alias because her name was Sharon Mack.
Right.
So she had his last name. So he was still using Paul Mack at that point when he married her. I don't know about the other ones. They've never come forward, and they're, like – they probably don't want to be associated with him, honestly.
Yeah, no kidding.
Is my guess. So in 1987, Paul Mack was living in Sacramento, California. He was engaged to another woman and was claiming to be a photographer. So Paul was a frequent customer of a restaurant called the Peppermill Restaurant, and that is where he met 21-year-old Karen Winslet, who was a waitress and a part-time model. Okay. So Karen Grace Winslet was born August 11th of 1965 in LA County, California. She was very driven, very kind, very pretty, an aspiring model. She had big goals for herself, big dreams. She lived with her boyfriend, and his name was David, and was just trying to work to get her modeling career going. So Karen very often went to photo shoots and auditions for modeling. But she was, like, overly cautious for her time. Like, she always took either her boyfriend or a friend with her to these photo shoots or auditions. She would not go alone. She was, like, very skittish. And she was, like I said, she was overly cautious. I mean, we're talking about the 80s at this point. Like, we weren't scared like we are now. Or, like, we weren't aware.
Right. Teens like were hitchhiking and... You know, yeah.
Right. But Karen was. She was an exception to that. On February 19th of 1987, no one was available to go with her to a photo shoot that she had been scheduled for. She had been approached by a customer at the restaurant where she had worked. Any guesses who it was?
Paul Mack.
Paul Mack had told her that he was a photographer for Budweiser. And asked her if she wanted to pose for a photo shoot to possibly be in their calendar. Do you remember the Budweiser calendar? I don't know about the horses. No, I don't think so. Because it was like at his house. But like, I remember the Budweiser calendar being a big thing.
Yeah.
So Paul had told Karen to come by his place on the morning of the 19th. And he would do some test shots for her and submit them to his people at Budweiser. And Karen was very happy to agree, although she was nervous about it because she had to go by herself. So she did not like that. So she actually left a note for her boyfriend with the date and the time of the photo shoot, Paul Mack's name, the address, and directions to where she would be
going. So she's like super smart.
I know. Girl had a head on a swivel before that was even a thing. Like,
I know.
So David, boyfriend, actually went home on his lunch break because he had to pick up some tools and he saw the note there and he like brought it with him and then went back to work. On his way home from work, he stopped by the restaurant where Karen worked, that Peppermill restaurant, just to like check in. How did the shoot go? You know, grab some dinner while, you know, from her while she's working. But he learned that she didn't show up for her 4 o'clock shift that day and that nobody had been able to reach her. So he's immediately alarmed. He goes home to see if Karen was there, sick, maybe not feeling well, asleep, whatever. She wasn't there, and it looked like she hadn't been back. So, like, he was there at lunchtime. It looked exactly the same. So boyfriend goes to the daggone house where Karen said she was supposed to be and knocks on the door. Paul Mack's fiance answered the door, and she claimed that she didn't know anything about what he was talking about. She was, like, kind of confused, like, no, there's no girl that was supposed to come here for a photo shoot today. Well, Paul comes up behind and is like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know, Karen. There has not been a photo shoot scheduled for today. She was not supposed to be here.
He's probably like, my girlfriend's not going to make this up.
Right. Like, I have it here on this, like, post-it note.
Right.
But whatever. So he's confused. He leaves. He reports Karen missing. After he gets home, though, he got a phone call from Paul Mack. Paul said that he did all of a sudden remember, after David had left, that he did know Karen. I remember that girl from the restaurant.
Oh,
and
Lord.
I did make an appointment for her to come for a photo shoot for sometime around this time. But she had told him that she was moving to San Diego. And so he said not to bother to come to the photo shoot because I guess whatever he needed her for, she needed to be in Sacramento. Hmm. And she said she was leaving. So he kind of canceled on her. Okay, so boyfriend tells police this, all of this, and police interviewed Paul, but he again denied, I never met her, like, I never met her on that day. I mean, he told him what he told the boyfriend, like, yes, I met her, yes, she was supposed to come, but I didn't meet with her on this day. She never showed up, we canceled. So police are searching, there's no leads, they can't find Karen anywhere, no one's heard from her. 2 weeks later, her car was spotted by a friend parked behind a Super 8 motel. So the car was locked, but police were able to get inside through the back hatch of the car, and inside the car, they found Karen. Dead. She was hidden underneath a pile of clothing and, like, the carpeting from the car.
Oh, man.
So Karen had been raped, and she did have defensive wounds to her body.
Mm.
Her cause of death was determined to be an overdose of the pain medication Percocet. She had 25 times the lethal dose of the drug in her system.
25 times the lethal dose?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of Percocet.
It's all the Percocet.
Yeah.
I would imagine, like, everything. So police at this point learned that Paul Mack was a suspect in another murder of young women. So finally, at this point, we're, like, digging in enough to say, like, okay, this man may have a past.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they questioned Paul, but he stuck to his story. Police then were able to determine that Paul had an open prescription for Percocet written by his dentist for tooth pain. They also searched his home and were able to identify that fibers from Paul's carpet and comforter matched those found on the body of Karen.
Oh.
So a warrant was issued for Paul's arrest for the rape and the first degree murder of Karen. Paul's attorney found out about the warrant and contacted the Sacramento police and made arrangements for Paul to surrender. However, Paul took off.
Oh, good.
He flew the coop again. Like the big chicken he is. And he went to Salt Lake City and got a job as a chef.
Mm-hmm.
He met and married Margie and was living a new life as Sean Paul Lanier.
Wow.
So the murder of Karen happened in February. He met Margie like a month later, and then less than a year was married to her. Isn't that so scary?
Jeez.
Like, that's how quickly he moved. Until Margie and our man John Walsh nailed his murdering ass with an episode of America's Most Wanted.
Right. No kidding.
So he was arrested, extradited back to California for the murder of Karen Winslet, because that's the one he had been charged with. He went on trial for her rape and murder in 1990. The trial lasted 3 weeks. Margie actually flew out to California and testified against him. Even though while he was in prison awaiting his trial, he was harassing her from prison. Like calling her all the time, threatening her. She would change her phone number. He would find it.
Jeez.
She would find out where he worked, where she worked, and would like call and harass her at work. Scary stuff. And he, so like he had somebody helping him, she thinks, because I saw in one interview that she said he would call her at work and be like, I really love that pretty red blouse you're wearing. And she would have on a red blouse. So like, and this is from prison. Like this guy right. is a piece.
Yeah. And if I were her, I would be going to testify against him too to make sure that he doesn't like get off.
Well, true. But that would be really scary. Like that would take a lot of bravery, I feel like, to yeah. to do that. And she did. Like this woman, Margie.
Mm-hmm.
She cracked this case.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I love her. So Paul actually also testified in his own defense. And he claimed that Karen had come to his house that day and they had had consensual sex. That's what they all mm-hmm. say, Paul. He also claimed that the two of them had got into Karen's car, presumably to go find drugs, and that they had fought and she kicked him out of the car. And she must have overdosed herself on Percocet after he left, but that she was fine mm-hmm. when he got out of her car. He said that she must have stolen his prescription. Of Percocet while she okay. was at his home. Yeah. But he never gave them to her. She was not a drug user. She didn't right. want to go. She wouldn't have bought drugs. She's not stealing prescriptions. Like this girl had a vision for her life. This was not who she was. So Paul was convicted of the rape and first degree murder of Karen. He was sentenced to 25 years to life in prison. Investigators reinvestigated the Annette Huddles murder now that they knew he actually was a rapist and murderer, but again, were never able to find enough evidence to formally charge Paul with her rape and murder. So that case actually remained open, and he obviously said he had nothing to do with it. In 2018, at the age of 71 years old, Paul died in prison of natural causes.
Wow.
So he never got paroled. After his death, Paul's attorney contacted the investigators in Ohio and told them that just before he died, Paul had confessed to Annette's murder. And he had given the attorney instructions like, you can tell police that I did it, but not until after I die.
Wow.
So even though he was never prosecuted for Annette's murder, he is who everyone believes committed it, and he did die in prison. So her case was actually officially closed because he was like their only suspect
right.
in yeah. the case. Okay. And they well, all knew he did it. They just couldn't prove it.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So I think at least like not that her family got justice, but like at least they know. Like yeah. he admitted mm-hmm. to it at least.
Right.
And that is the case of Karen Winslet and Annette Huddle.
That is so nutty.
And Margie is and Margie. Awesome.
And Margie's I mean, friend who said, turn on America's Most Wanted.
Yeah, but Margie, she amateur detected her way and took down a potential serial killer.
Well, yeah. I mean, actually, he is a serial killer, right? Because well, he
well no, because
people.
He was never charged with.
Right. I'm formally. Saying, yeah, so like technically not, but like.
Yeah. And she's lucky she survived him.
Well, that's what I was about to say. Like, he didn't seem to kill the women he was married to. Like, it's like well, he wanted true. To hide behind the normalcy of life.
Mm-hmm. That's a good
and
point.
And hide in the shadows that way because he killed just random girls.
Mm-hmm.
Not random. I mean, it was people that he had met somewhere, but like they weren't married. He wasn't
his
dating
wives.
Them or married. Yeah.
Yeah. But he, yeah. I mean, she was catching on to him.
Right.
Like
right.
onto his left. I think he would have killed her.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, and if she kept pushing and, like, was like, I don't believe you, like, mm-hmm. I could see him turning and being like, well, now I've got to get rid of you because now you're figuring it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then those poor yeah. three children would have been left with no one.
Right. Yeah. Her three daughters. Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they liked him. They liked right. the man. I don't know that probably Margie did not share her, like, concerns about him being dangerous with her children, I would imagine. Right. They were young.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, they didn't get skeeved out by him. No red flags. He was a super nice man, great stepdad. Like, mm-hmm. love. They seemed happy, her parents. One of her daughters said, like, they seemed happy. My mom seemed happy. Like, he was great. So she did say, Margie, though, in one documentary that I watched, because she speaks publicly about this a lot. Mm-hmm. I'd never heard of this case either, by the way. Had you?
Well, no, not this one. But when you were talking, I thought it was one that I had heard of, but it wasn't.
Oh, okay.
It's not the same. It's very similar.
Huh. Interesting. But she said in this documentary that she hopes, like, the biggest takeaway from her story is that women always remember to learn to listen to their gut. Like,
yeah.
She was skeeved out. It didn't make sense to her, but she mm-hmm. knew in her gut that something wasn't right, that there was something not right about this man. And she listened to it and she was right.
Yeah.
So, and she's remarried. She's happy. She seems like a great lady. Like, right. I just loved her.
Wow. Amazing. Go Margie. Go Margie. Gosh. What a tool.
For real. He did.
Jeez.
But yeah, and I wonder too, I mean, it's just crazy to think that he would have killed these two women 6 years apart. So those murders were 6 years apart.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What happened in between? Like,
yeah, there's got,
what well, do we he know?
Was, he was in jail. No, he wasn't in jail between them. He was in jail after. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, he was in jail in like the, so the first murder that we know of, Annette, 1981. Karen's was 1987. Sometime 83, 84, he was in jail for like marijuana. Mm-hmm. And then I think there was like a couple, like a probation violation in there. Probation for what? I have no idea.
Mm.
But yeah, he was a career criminal. Like,
right. Yeah, there's probably someone out there else out there, I'd imagine.
At least maybe not murdered, but like some other victims out there in some capacity, yeah. I would think.
Right. Man.
Man.
Jeez.
Paul Mack.
There's definitely another one out there because I saw a documentary on one once and I was like, what? You were married a murderer and you didn't know? Like, oh.
Yeah. So, wow. Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, I mean, she didn't know, but she knew.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, she says that. Like, she says something was off about him. Like, I didn't obviously think, oh my gosh, my husband's a murderer. But then I was like, but when it was brought to her that maybe he could be a murderer, she was like, listen, there's something. I don't know if it's that, but there's something. So it's like she didn't know, but she did know something was off about him. Mm. Oh, my gosh. What's his face? What's his face? Gacy, his wife.
Well,
she didn't
know
he was murdering all those people.
Right. Yeah. No, but I mean, like, the one that I saw was, like, very similar to this, where she started getting clues and she'd question, like, a Social Security card, and he'd be like, oh, that's, like, so-and-so's and whatever. Like, like, it was very, like, as you were saying, I'm like, is this the same case? That's not the same names. And I don't remember, like, that part, but so there, I can't think of it now, but I swore I was taking notes on it. So maybe I had planned on doing it at some point. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's just crazy. Like, oh, gosh. Well, I'm glad that he's eventually got caught, and I'm glad that Margie was the one that took him down.
I know. I loved her. The documentary I watched, I'll link. There's a couple of them, and I'll link them. And I do recommend, she's involved in both of them. And just her story of, like, her sleuthiness is it's great. It's what we would do. We're just not letting this go, buddy. We hear you have every answer to every question that we're asking, but, like, it's not enough because something about you.
How did our listener, who we think is Karen, hear it? Do you know?
I can't remember.
Okay.
I don't know. I think she just did. I think she was just like, this would be an interesting one for you. And if I'm wrong about that, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I was just curious. But thank you, Karen, for bringing that to our attention, because
thank you.
That was, I mean, it's never fun when you're talking about murder, but it's like, it was fun in terms of, like, how he got caught and stuff like that. So, and the lengths that Margie went to. So
I know. She did great. She did great.
Yeah. So anyway, so thank you. Thank you for diving in, and thank you for sending that to us. And
yes,
thank you to everyone who sends them to us, because we are never without. People ask me, when, like, it's amazing to me that people that I know don't know that I do this. because I don't think I talk about it that much unless somebody asks a question. But
we're
like
getting better.
Yeah, I am getting better. Somebody actually posted on Facebook Marketplace, like, hey, podcast people out there, what's your favorite podcast? And I was like, well, not to promote myself or anything, but
good for you.
And she's like, I'll check you out. Like, or somebody said that. Anyway, so I'm like, well, maybe we'll get a few more listeners. But anyway, a friend of mine like walked up to me the other day and was like, you do a podcast? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, well, how do you get your cases? Like, where do you come up with them? And I'm like, we haven't had to come up with them since like maybe 6 months in or something like that. It was really fast. People started sending them to us and they haven't stopped.
And I do think that we, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, I've kind of fallen off on listening to like true crime podcasts these days. I think we might be one of the only ones that is solely based on suggestions.
Well, I mean, it's possible. I know we are ones that solely give credit to the people. Like, I feel like I don't hear that true. Often. Like, hey, this one was sent in by blah, blah, blah. But I don't listen to everyone that's out there. So there's probably somebody out there that does that. But yeah, it's amazing. You guys are amazing. And it keeps us going because that part is like the hard part is like finding one that would fit.
It's you take the guesswork right out of it for us.
Yeah. And we know that it's something you want to hear about. So, and you're our listeners. So we'll do it. Anyway. All right. So thank you guys. Thank you for doing that. We appreciate it. And thank you for listening and joining us in the closet today. And go find us over on Patreon and on socials again so that you can see pictures of all the things or that we might be posting about these cases or whatever. And love the interaction that we get from you. So thanks for all of that too. And I guess that's it. That's all I got for you. So always remember the world is scary. People suck. Hide in your closets.